The Safe Bicycling in Illinois pamphlet, Kids on Bikes in Chicago pamphlet, those for other cities, and a book which is called Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips, Low-Tech and No-Tech Ways to Find, Ride, and Keep a Bicycle. David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jay.
It's good to talk to you. I have to admit up front that it's been, and I just figured this out when I was given the assignment to do the program today, it's been 25 years since I've ridden a bicycle.
Well, it seems like a long time, but you're not alone. There are lots of Americans who have the same sort of experience.
Well, that's what I understand from reading some of your stuff here. Americans are afraid to get on their bikes for one reason or another. I have no good excuse, and I was contemplating this over the weekend. I was thinking about this pretty hard last weekend when I was reading the book. You know, I live about 4 miles from work, and I could ride a bike to work, no problem, but I just don't do it. I don't even own one at this point, and I don't know why. So,
well, one of the statistics that may inform us about why is that, you know, in the U.S., the number of three-vehicle households has increased from 3 million to 19 million in the last 15 years, a threefold increase. And meanwhile, the population's grown only 26%, so more people are driving their cars, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I get in my car, and the only place I drive it is here, and then I drive it home, and that's it. And it would be just as easy to drive a bike, and maybe in the wintertime, you know, if it gets really bad, hop on the bus or something. But we'll talk about that. Why don't people ride bikes? How we could get into it, you know, what it would take to get going with it. And we'll open up the telephone lines anywhere throughout the program at 333-9455 if you'd like to call and talk about bicycling, if you have some particular questions about your bike, about safe biking practices, if you need some tips on teaching your child to ride a bike. Give us a call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and anywhere else you can hear us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Feel free to give us a call. Well, let's talk about your background just a little bit. How did you get interested in getting into publishing concerning riding bikes?
Well, I've been a journalist for about 10 years, and when I moved to Chicago in 89, I started hanging around with what we call bicycle advocates, people who work to make conditions better for bicycling all across the country. And here in Chicago, the advocates had convinced the city to do two things. One is adopt a bike plan for the city that would improve road conditions and increase public education about bicycling. And also, as part of that, the second thing they did is got the city to agree to and get some government money to do a bike safety booklet. You mentioned Safe Bicycling in Illinois, which I wrote. The predecessor to that was Safe Bicycling in Chicago, which is a 32-page booklet. And as a journalist, the advocates approached me and said, how would you like to write that? And I said, okay. One thing led to another. That booklet came out. It was very popular, and as was the Illinois version. And that led me to write my latest book, Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips.
Mm-hmm. Let's go right to the telephone. We'll continue the conversation in and out of telephone calls, or maybe we'll just jam up the phone lines this hour. It's a pretty good topic, especially you know, for those of us who need a little information on how to get back on the bike, I think. And I'm going to be asking you some stuff about that, some tips on finding a bike in just a few minutes and what you need, how to fit it. But first, let's go to line 4. Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Eureka.
From Eureka, Illinois. Okay.
Yes. May I ask three quick questions, please?
Sure.
The first one is, I know what the law is, but sometimes I like to listen to classical music when I'm out in the country. Do you know of any radios that are specially designed for bicycles? I realize you're not supposed to listen to it on headphones. Have you ever had any experience in that area?
You can do two things. First of all, do you ever drive a car?
Yes.
Do you listen to the radio?
Yes.
Well, see, most people do, and so it shouldn't be any different on a bicycle. You can actually take a transistor radio and rubber band it to your handlebars, you know, and that would be loud enough for you to hear, but not so loud that you wouldn't be able to hear things you need to hear around you. Also, if you use a Walkman, you can do the same thing with that, really. You don't have to go through any extra
effort. I see.
Yeah, just, you know, keep them turned down really low so they're as loud as the radio would be in your car, but so you can still hear the stuff around you.
Yeah. But secondly, would you be able to, I realize WILL is non-commercial, recommend a very reliable, long-lasting bike in the $300 to $400 price range?
If you go to do you live near a bicycle dealer?
Yeah, there's one about 8 miles away that's pretty good.
Your best bet, I think, is just to go there and ask them the same question, because the advantage of going to a bike shop as opposed to a discount store is a bike shop assembles the bike correctly, and secondly, they will service it if something goes wrong. And so if you just give them your price range, chances are they have a bike for you, and if they don't have one in stock, they can order it.
There's one that's very good that's done some maintenance.
Yeah, that's important. If it has a good reputation and you know about it,
yeah, they're very, very
that's real important.
Okay, my final question is, do you know of, like, one single volume that has most of the bike trails in Illinois on it?
A single what?
A single volume book that has all or most of the bike trails in Illinois in it?
Not off the top of my head. There are many maps and books about parts of Illinois. However, what you can do is you can get a free publication from the state of Illinois. The state of Illinois has published bike maps for every region of the country, and they're called the Illinois Official Bicycle Maps, and it's broken down into, I believe, 9 regions. And you can call the state for that. And I'm looking here to see if I can find a phone number.
782-0834.
Where'd you get that, Jay?
782-0834.
782-0834? Yeah.
And are these publications sent out free?
Yeah.
And you could get them for all 9 official regions of the state?
I think the only region they haven't completed yet is the Chicago region.
I see.
But you can get a Chicagoland map from Chicagoland Bike Federation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you much for the call.
Jay, where did you get that number?
Out of the back of your pamphlet.
God bless.
Right.
Step ahead of me.
Right on the back page. It also lists the website, Department of Transportation website, which is www.state.il.us. And from there, I guess you can get some more information, too. And to order the booklet, by the way, that that David authored from the Department of Transportation Division of Traffic Safety, that number is 217-524-5338. And if you lose that number, you can call us here at the radio station, and we'll pass it along to you.
Jay, I was just playing dumb to give you more airtime.
How kind of you. Hey, let's talk about buying a bicycle. You started to talk about that there, and since we're kind of on the urban biking theme, the in-city as opposed to maybe out in the country biking theme, with your latest book, which, by the way, we should let's mention up front what we're talking about. It's Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips, and it's published by Wordspace Press in Chicago and is available pretty generally, bicycle stores and bookstores, and I think there's an 800 number, and that's what I'm looking for now. Or there is an order number.
Yeah, there is a phone 800 number people can call for phone orders. That's 800-888-4741. Mm-hmm. But right in Champaign, several bookstores who told me they're stocking it are Pages for All Ages.
Uh-huh.
They have a special section for books by people who are on your radio station,
mm-hmm.
as I am. And Barnes & Nobles and Borders said they'll stock it also.
Okay. And then again, the 800 number, though, if you'd like to telephone order, if you're not right in this area, 1-800-888-4741?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Let's talk about buying a bike. You said probably the best place to go is a more established, reputable bicycle dealer.
That's correct.
The old bike shop. And when I was young, there was one kind of bike, and that was Schwinn. That was it.
Yeah.
When I had bikes, I had Schwinn Typhoons, I think.
I remember those.
I delivered newspapers, and they had the big tires. You put a big basket on the front. Mm-hmm. And the Stingray, remember the Stingray?
Yep.
Okay. I heard those might be coming back, by the way, but with the Volkswagen Beetle.
Well, you can get a bicycle similar to the old Schwinn Typhoon. They're known as cruisers nowadays, and in other places they're known as city bikes, and they're different from a lot of the bikes that have been out recently, namely the mountain bikes and the road bikes, in that you sit upright. Often they have a spring seat. They have wider tires, but not real knobby like mountain bike tires, mm-hmm. so you absorb bumps more easily. And they're they're getting to be pretty affordable too. And by affordable, I mean, you know, you can generally pay about $300, $400 for that. A lot of people think you have to pay more than that, $500 for a bike, but I think you should be able to get a good bike in the $200 to $300 price range.
See, that again shows you how long it's been, because I think I never paid over $40 or so for a bike.
Well, that's inflation has accounted for some of that, too.
Yeah, that's right. Cars are over $2,000 now, aren't they, too?
Something like that.
Let's talk about what kind of bike to look for. Now, let's say, you know, we're going to ride around in town, maybe go to work with it, maybe run, you know, some errands once in a while, get a little exercise. Do we need to be looking at a 10-speed, more racing type bike, you know, mountain bike? What are we looking for, basically?
I think that one of the most popular bikes now sold, and for good reason, is called the hybrid or the cross bike. This is a bike that has tires not quite as wide as your standard mountain bike and not as thin as a road bike, and so is more forgiving to bumps. And also, it allows you to be a little more upright than your standard mountain bike or road bike. But the wheels are big enough so that if you wanted to take it off-road, it could handle it. And if you wanted to ride on some trails as opposed to riding on concrete all the time. But the tires aren't so big that when you ride on concrete that they give you lots of resistance and a harder pedal. So for most people, for sort of general riding in a variety of areas, I would suggest a cross or hybrid bike.
Okay. Let me remind everyone of the telephone numbers quickly here. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 1-800-222-9455 from anywhere else. And feel free to join the conversation at any point if you have a question that I may not be getting to. What about fitting a bike? What do we do? How do you, when you walk into the store and you look, and let's say we find, you know, this perfect machine that we think we're going to buy, how do we decide whether it fits us?
One of the basic fit criteria involves the seat. If you can sit on the bike and get the seat adjusted to a level where your leg that is on the pedal that's down at the 6 o'clock position, if that leg has only a slight bend at the knee, then generally that bike should fit you. If you can't get the seat to that height properly, in other words, if you raise it so high it comes out of the frame, well, that bike frame is probably too short. You should probably get a bigger one. Also, a second problem that people have with fit is they find they're leaned over too much. And sometimes that means the bike frame is too long, but other times it merely means that the stem of the handlebar, the part where the handlebar attaches to the bike, is too long itself. And that part can be easily replaced. And if you make it shorter, sometimes you don't lean over so much. So if you can get those two things to work for you, then it's a pretty good bet that the bike fits. But to make sure, you should have the bike dealer check you out on it.
Mm-hmm. What is the difference now between, you know, having the straighter handlebars, the ones that curve back toward you, or the ones that kind of curl under? That, you know, I'm thinking of the early 10-speeds. All of them had those curl under handlebars. And I hated those things because you were almost bent almost all the way over trying to ride those things.
Well, Jay, that was deliberate. Those bikes were mimicking the racing bikes that became very popular on the West Coast, and that being curled under enabled you to lean way over. If you look at races, say the Tour de France, everyone are riding bikes like that because that gives them bent way over for less wind resistance. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, bike manufacturers have realized not everyone's out there to race, so now we have handlebars that are more like the traditional ones that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Where they're curved back. Also, mountain bike handlebars, which are generally straight, you know, just a straight bar, have what we call bar ends on it. They look like two little double horns that stick up. So if you want to be more upright sometimes and a little more leaned over other times, you put these bar ends up and you raises your posture up a little bit. So generally, the different shapes of handlebars determine how leaned over you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. What about seats? What kind of seat to look for? You know, the difference being some of them seem to be bigger and have even springs under them, and then you've got the more narrow racing-type seats that I remember not so fondly.
One of the things that I talk about in my book, Urban Biker's Tricks and Tips, is the phenomenon of sore butts, because that's what I find when I teach bicycling people complain about the most, especially if they haven't been on a bike for a long time. And the kind of seat that you get is really determined, first of all, by the bike that you buy. When you buy a bike, it's going to have a certain kind of seat on it. And I would say don't replace it unless you have a problem. If you have a problem, it's generally one of two things. It's either your butt is sore from just sitting a long time, and that might just go away with time. If you ride regularly, you'll get used to it. If it doesn't, then you might want to look at a seat with springs or a gel seat, a seat that has actually a gel foam inside.
Oh, really?
Yeah, those are very popular. And then another problem is that people just have rubbing. The sides of the seat, the periphery of the seat, might rub on your thighs or something. In that case, you should vary the width, maybe get a slimmer seat. And then if you want to get a little more high-tech, maybe at $20 or $30 the whole arrangement, you can actually get a suspension seat where the thing will bounce up and down. It imitates springs, but it's a little more sophisticated.
What's the biggest problem? Why do seats... why do you get a sore butt with a seat? Is it improperly adjusted, perhaps? Say you got a good seat and you're still getting sore.
Then another thing you could do in terms of adjustment is check to make sure that the seat is tilted properly. When you buy a bike, generally the seat doesn't have any tilt on it. It's very level. But most people don't realize that you can adjust the seat in two ways. You can tilt it down so the nose is pointed down, which causes you to slide forward a little bit, or tilt it up, which will cause you to slide back a little bit. You can make those adjustments. Another adjustment you can make to make sure that you're sitting on the proper part of the seat is the seat actually can go forward and back. You can loosen the nut underneath, and it will actually slide forward and back. So you can make those two adjustments first before investing in a new seat.
When I used to race sunfish sailboats, we used to wear shorts with kind of some rawhide padding on the butt. And that used to help because, sitting on that hard deck all the time, especially when you're heeling over, you'd be way up on the edge and stuff. And I noticed in your book there is such a thing available for bicyclers.
Yeah, bicycle shorts generally have the same thing. They have padding around the crotch area so it prevents chafing. Often when people use regular shorts, their street clothes, bicycling, the reason they get chafing is because the seams on the inside of the clothing rub against their skin. And so bike shorts are made so that the seams are covered by this padding, so you don't have that problem.
333-9455. 333-9455 is our number in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Those are our telephone numbers. If you'd like to join the conversation, Dave Groatz is my guest, and he is the author of the book Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips, Low-Tech and No-Tech Ways to Find, Ride, and Keep a Bicycle. Join the conversation here on the Afternoon Magazine if you'd like. My name is Jay Pierce, in for Celeste Quinn today, and we're at about the midpoint of the interview. Let's talk, David, a little bit about keeping a bike, since it's mentioned prominently on the front of the book. What's the latest technology and anti-theft equipment? We used to just call them locks.
Well, Jay, I still call them locks. Just to frame the issue, the FBI says that about 500,000 bikes are stolen each year in the U.S. That's about 1,300 a day. And it says that half of those bikes that are stolen, those are just the ones reported, mind you, there are probably many more stolen, half of those are locked. So what's going on? Are the locks bad? Well, generally not. It's a combination of things. One is people are using inferior locks, but also they're locking in the wrong place. They're not locking smart. And I talk about in my book I talk about where to lock, how to lock, and what your bike should look like. I devote a whole chapter to anti-theft because it's a big issue. So let's talk about the locks themselves. The locks generally that you can buy for bicycles are pretty good if you spend enough money on them. If you spend $20 for, say, a U-style lock that makers such as Kryptonite and Master Lock and others make, that's not a very good lock and can be easily defeated by a thief. So I would say that you should spend probably upwards of $30 or $40 for a reliable lock. The second thing you should do, if you really want to make sure your bike isn't going to be stolen, is do what I call cross-lock. That's where you use two different kind of locking mechanisms. You can use a traditional U-style lock, and then also lock your bike with a chain or cable locked with a heavy padlock. When I say heavy, I mean 3/16 of an inch diameter or more. That way, when a thief sees that your bike is locked with a double mechanism, you'll see that the bike next to you is probably not locked that way, and so we'll go on to the other bike because it'll take him more time to get through yours.
Yeah. And you need to, yeah, that's a very good point. I remember when we first started thinking about this, everybody used to take their, lock their bike up and then take their front tire with them, you know, wherever you went. I had one of the U-shaped locks one time and locked my bike up and came back, and the front tire and the U-shaped lock were there, but the rest of the bike was gone.
And this, the second thing that you want to think about, not just the locks themselves, but how you lock, you should never do that, what you just said. You should always lock it to the frame and lock it to something secure. Don't lock to a wooden fence post or a small tree. You know, lock it to something that's secure and unmovable.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many bikes ever end up back with their owners when they're stolen?
I don't have any statistics on that, Jay, but I know that here in Chicago we have an extensive bicycle registration system that involves you just simply filling out a card that has your bicycle serial number on it, which is stamped on the frame, as well as a description of the bike. And if police recover your stolen bike, and they do recover many every year, and they check their database and you're in it, they'll get your bike back to you. And I personally know some folks who have gotten their bike back that way. And many towns have programs like that. And you should always, when you get a bike, first thing you do is write down the registration number for yourself and even take a photo of it, because that's pretty good identification.
Yeah. I want to talk about bicycle maintenance for a moment, and then I want to get into talking about bicycling, the process of riding a bicycle itself, and some tips maybe for making that a little bit easier and safer, too. Let's talk about maintenance. What are some of the things that we should think about? You know, at least on the basic level, we know that we ought to take a car in, for instance, every 3,000 miles and change the oil. But I think a lot of us just leave our bikes sit and, you know, just count on them working.
Well, if you haven't used your bike in a while, you should check a few things before riding. Mm-hmm. And then if you use your bike every day, some other things can get out of whack pretty quickly. And so you should check them every day. One of the things that you should check first is your wheels. Some people have the unfortunate experience of leaving their bike for a while and then going for a ride and finding their wheels aren't even attached and pitching over the handlebars. So you should pick up your front wheel and give it a spin, make sure it spins freely, and do that for your back wheel. You should also make sure that your tires on the wheels are inflated properly. Rubber is permeable, so it loses a little bit of air every day, so you can just simply take your tire and press it against a curb or with the heel of your hand. And if it goes in a significant amount, it probably needs some air. And by the way, the air pressure that it will take is stamped on the side of the tire. So if you've got a pressure gauge, you can go to a gas station air pump or use a floor pump and inflate it properly. Mm-hmm. Another thing you should do is make sure that your chain goes around okay. Pick up the rear wheel and then pedal forward and pedal backwards. And if it squeaks or it hangs up a little bit, then get yourself some bicycle chain lubricant. Don't use Crisco or 3-in-1 oil because those attract dirt. And lube your chain a little bit. And your chain will tell you when it needs lube generally. It'll start squeaking.
Are you serious about Crisco?
Yeah, don't use it.
People use that?
People will use whatever's in the house, you know, because, it's like, well, it's grease, you know, and you got to grease the chain. Yeah.
Yes.
But something like that that's very viscous, what happens is when you get out on the road, it just attracts a lot of dirt in it, and it really gunks up your chain. That's why bicycle chain lubes are made not to be greasy, so they don't attract dirt.
Okay. Anything else we should think about? Should we put a toolkit together to carry somehow?
Depends where you're going to go, Jay. If you're going to be going where you can't easily get back to your starting point, or you're not near civilization like a gas station where you can't make a phone call, you know, often if you just bring a couple quarters with you, that's enough to make a phone call and get you back where you're going. But if you're going to be on the road for a while, then, a simple patch kit, you should learn how to use it, too. And my book has a step-by-step illustration for how to fix a flat tire, and also maybe a screwdriver and an adjustable wrench, and an air pump. You can buy a very small air pump that'll fit in a bag in a backpack for about maybe $15, and that should keep you going for most of the problems you'll encounter.
Well, let's get into some of the mechanics of bicycling now, because I think, at least for me, and as we were talking earlier, I get the hint that maybe for a lot of other folks, the reasons that we're not bicycling as much as we might, because we think it's bicycle to work, and then you got to change your clothes, or you might get sweaty on your way, or the weather might be bad, or it's just a hassle to go in and out of the cars, and any number of reasons that we could come up with. So let's talk about that. How do we address some of these? Let's talk from the perspective of somebody who wants to just bicycle around town, instead of driving the car 4 or 5 blocks or a mile or so.
One of the things that might help you get oriented to bicycling is the cost. The typical yearly cost of a regular U.S. commuter to own and operate a bicycle versus a car is $20 to $300 annually for a bicycle versus $3,300 to $6,500 for a car.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're thinking that a bicycle is a big hassle, you might think about financial rewards.
I like that already.
Of operating it. Secondly, it's not as difficult as it looks, I find. When some people get biking, they realize it's not so much of a hassle. And one thing you can do, if you haven't been on a bike in a while, just to get past the inhibition of, well, how hard is it to bicycle, is just take your bike out in places and at times when you don't have a lot of things to deal with but just the bicycle itself. In other words, go out on a Sunday morning in a fairly traffic-free, say, parking lot or something, and just ride around. And if you're not comfortable on a bike, period, don't mix your challenges by going out in traffic first thing.
Yeah.
And that'll help you. Secondly, if you're concerned about losing your bike, you have a nice bike. Well, I talked a little bit about what you can do in terms of where to lock and how to lock. But if you don't have a lock right away, well, then just don't put yourself in a position where you're leaving your bike alone. Take it out for a ride, bring it back, and you'll feel a little less inhibited about the theft. Those are some of the things you can do.
Now, what about what should I wear?
Well, a lot of people, including myself, don't wear any special bike stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we watch TV and we see Lycra-clad racers running around on their bikes, and you think you gotta wear all that stuff. But generally, wear loose-fitting clothes, shorts, and in this sort of weather, T-shirt's probably okay. As the weather changes, you want to keep a windbreaker or a jacket around, maybe on your backpack, or if you have a bike rack on your back of your bike, you can strap that on. And when it gets cooler, put that on. You'll find as you ride, you generally warm up, so you want to dress in layers. When it gets cooler, especially, you don't want to put something on that you can't take off, in other words, a heavy jacket.
Mm-hmm.
So dress in layers, generally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're wearing long pants, a lot of bikes anymore aren't made with chain guards. It's a piece of metal that would keep your chain from making contact with your leg. So if you have such a bike that doesn't have a chain guard and you are wearing long pants, you might just take a rubber band and put that around your ankle. And you can actually buy an ankle strap with Velcro on it for $2 or $3 that'll do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're starting to have other sorts of problems like your seat is bothering you, as we mentioned earlier, then you might want to look into bike shorts or some seamless clothing. But those are pretty general guidelines.
Yeah, that should be all right. I can't tell you how many pairs of pants I had, the big black mark on the inside of the right leg right down near the cuff.
Yep.
Yep.
I never leave home without my ankle strap.
I tell you, that's a good idea. What about how about some safety ideas for going in traffic? Because, the streets, even in a town like Champaign and Urbana, towns like this, population about 100,000, the streets are pretty crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather inconvenient to have to, find a web of side streets to go through. Mm-hmm. So we may have to go on some streets that have significant traffic. What are some safety ideas in general that we should keep in mind? The caveat being that I understand that bicycles are subject to the same rules that cars are, right?
Well, on the back of that Illinois safety booklet that you were looking at earlier, it says exactly that. The traffic rules that apply to motorists also apply to bicyclists because the Illinois Vehicle Code defines bicycle riders as the operators of vehicles. So the single thing that will keep you the safest, Jay, is to simply obey traffic rules. Most people listening probably have a driver's license, so they already know the things that will keep them safe. In other words, don't do things like ride against traffic. A lot of us grew up being taught that you're safer riding against traffic because you can see the cars before they hit you. Well, chances are they'll hit you more readily if you're riding at them, because when you're driving a car, you don't expect something to come at you in your lane. It can be a big surprise. And so a large number of bicyclists get into crashes that way. So never, ever ride against traffic. And most of the other things are common sense traffic rules. Signal when you're going to make a turn. Don't ride erratically. If you're riding down a street in a line of parked cars and there's a break in the parked cars, don't ride into that space and ride back out, because the motorist behind you loses sight of you for a while and then forgets about you. And so when you pop back out, then there's a chance that you might get into a crash. Mm-hmm. One thing that you should do that is a little different mindset, involves a little different mindset than when you drive a car, is that you shouldn't hug the curb. You know, the traffic law says slower vehicles stay right. But the problem with bicycles that stay far to the right is, they get out of the driver's line of sight. So if you've got some distance between you and the curb and you're closer to traffic, actually you're safer than being farther away from traffic. It's particularly true at intersections, because one of the biggest causes of crashes are motorists turning right, what's called a right hook, and plowing right into the cyclist that is crossing the intersection going straight. So if you're farther out from the curb, motorists can see you better and can know to avoid you.
That's a good point. I have a question about turning in just a moment, but we do have a telephone call here on line four. Let's go to line four and welcome you to the Afternoon Magazine with Dave Groetz. And where are you calling from, please?
Oh, Eureka. Okay. And I wanted to inquire, sometimes you see trailers behind bikes, and would you comment a little bit about those? Sometimes they, for packages, sometimes they have them for maybe a rider or something. Would you comment about those trailers?
Yeah, I have one myself. You can, first of all, let's talk about cost. You can get a trailer for anywhere, I'd say, from $60 on up, and they're generally three different kinds. Well, two different things that vary amongst trailers. Either they're one-wheel or two-wheel trailers, and they are either attached right at the sort of the axle, the back axle of the bicycle, or they attach under the seat. And you can get one now that clamps on pretty easily and doesn't take much to get on and off. And the two-wheeler ones, I find, are a little more stable than the single-wheel ones. And so if you were going to go out and get one for groceries and the like, I recommend looking at two-wheel ones. And as I say, you don't have to spend a lot of money for them. If you can't find one under, say, $200, $150, look around a little more. Ask your bike dealer if they can order some or know of any catalogs. But generally, they're really good for transporting everything from lumber to children. And I've seen both carried in them. And some are made exclusively for children, as a matter of fact. I really like trailers a bunch.
Let me just say an observation. Sometimes they have these baskets that you can attach, like maybe to the back wheel or something like that on the sides.
Uh-huh.
And for a small amount of things, doesn't the bike function better just as a two-wheel bike rather than trying to pull a trailer?
Well, the only time I use a trailer is when I have to get a lot of groceries at one time. Or else I'm hauling a bunch of supplies to a conference or something like that. But you're right. For most carrying, I use what's called a pannier, P-A-N-N-I-E-R, which is a bicycle bag that clips onto a rear carrying rack. Let's back up a step. The carrying rack, to me, is one of the most essential pieces of bike carrying equipment. And you can pay as little as $10 for them, and they're simply a piece of metal, a metal platform that attaches over your rear wheel. If you have that on your bike, you can do all sorts of stuff. You don't even need a pannier. You can use elastic cords, bungee cords, and just strap stuff on to your rack. I mean, one time I strapped on a volleyball set to my rack, you know, and carried that around.
Yeah.
But if you have the rack, then you can hang panniers off it. You can get bike baskets that are very simple, sort of maybe $20 or $30 baskets that fold flat next to the bike and open up when you want to carry things. So I recommend getting something like that before you invest in a trailer.
Thank you very
All
much.
Right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line one now, and you're on the air with Dave Gloetz.
Hello, Dave. My question relates to riding near the curb or farther away from it. I want to expand a little bit or explore a little bit with you that issue. Often when I ride, I have my daughter along with me on a tag-along, and I find that we actually feel safer not only a little ways from the curb, but out actually fully in the lane, and then cars have to actually deal with us instead of crowding us off the shoulder or pulling around in front of us or things. Especially as we go under viaducts, sometimes a car will crowd us, and unless we take the whole lane, we seem to get pushed up against the wall or something. I wonder if you'd comment on that, what the various bicycling groups talk about in relation to that kind of riding and what's best to do there.
I couldn't have said it much better than you did, and that's absolutely the right thing to do. In a situation where you fear that you cannot share the lane safely with cars, now what do I mean by sharing? If the lane, the rightmost lane that the car is in, isn't big enough for you and the car to fit without crowding, as you say, then the safest thing for you to do is to take the lane. In other words, get out in the middle, as you say, and that way motorists can stay out of your way, and they can pass you. They can pass you in the left lane. If you're in a situation where there's only one lane in each direction, and there's a, you know, there's no choice. In other words, if you don't take the lane, that you're going to get crowded. Take the lane, and then if you find that at some point you're blocking traffic, find a safe place to pull over, let the traffic pass, and then proceed. But yeah, it's a solid principle of safe bicycling.
Thank you.
Thank you much for the call. Dave Gloatz is the author of Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips, Low-Tech and No-Tech Ways to Find, Ride, and Keep a Bicycle. Our telephone numbers are 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 1-800-222-9455 elsewhere. Now let's go to line two. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, what is the rule on riding two abreast?
In Illinois, it is legal to ride two abreast as long as you don't block traffic. That's pretty much all the vehicle code says.
Okay. That's pretty open to interpretation, I
guess.
Okay. There you go. Let me ask a question. Thanks for the call, by the way. Let me ask a question, Dave, about left turns. Let's say you're in a situation where you're on a four-lane road and it has a left turn lane. Should you get all the way over in that left turn lane and wait for the arrow along with the cars?
I describe this also in my book, Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips, that you have a couple of options. What you just described, Jay, is the vehicular, if you will, way to do it. In other words, the way to do it like an automobile, and it's perfectly legal, and it's a very safe way to do it as long as you do it like an automobile would. In other words, if you're on the right side of the road and you know you have to get into that left turn lane, well, then you look behind, you signal, you change lanes till you get over, and then get in the middle of that lane and take the lane, as our previous caller said, so cars don't crowd you out of it. Never get to the left side of the left lane, because after you make the turn, you'll end up in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
If you're just not comfortable with getting out there in a left turn lane, you don't have to do it. You can do what I call in my book the box left turn, which is simply proceeding through the intersection on the right-hand side of the street, and as you cross the street, move over to the right a little bit so you're next to the crosswalk. Don't go in the crosswalk because we don't want to knock over any pedestrians, but go next to the crosswalk, cross the street, then position yourself with traffic waiting at the cross street red light, either in front of the crosswalk or behind the crosswalk if there's room there. Then when on the cross street, the traffic light turns green, then proceed. And that's a lot easier for some folks than using a left turn lane, but both are legal and safe.
Well, we have two more telephone callers on the lines right now waiting, so let's get to them. And that will probably be all the time for calls we have. About five more minutes left in the program. Let's go to line four. Hi, where are you calling from?
Sterling, Illinois.
Sterling, all right.
Let's see if you would agree with me on this. A person can eliminate or reduce his cyclist inferiority complex if he wears a rearview mirror on his glasses.
Cyclist inferiority complex?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, bicyclists often have an inferiority complex when it comes to cars.
Are you talking about just the fear of someone coming up behind them?
Yes.
Okay, well, I have two comments on that. One is that regardless of whether you use a mirror or not, you should learn and practice the skill of looking back over your shoulder. Looking back over your shoulder does two things for you. One is it now enables you to see all the way around you, not just a limited area that the mirror shows you, but also, maybe more importantly, it signals to a motorist behind you that you're aware of that motorist, and if you're about to, say, change lanes, that you're about to do something. So it's a communication thing that I think is very important. When you make eye contact with motorists, I think you become a little more of a reality to them. So it's very important. Secondly, a lot of people find that mirrors do make them more comfortable. You know, you call it an inferiority complex. Some people just are not comfortable with not being able to see behind them all the time because, you know, when you drive a car, you've got a rearview mirror, so why not on a bike? And you can get a rearview mirror that, as you say, attaches right to your helmet, so it's there all the time when you put your helmet on, or it attaches to the bike, say on the handlebars. Some people have problems with both of them. Like on the bike, if you lean your bike, you might knock the mirror off. And some people toss their helmets into a corner right when they get home, and so they knock their mirrors off. So if you use a mirror, you got to be careful that you don't wreck it. But, yeah, generally a mirror can help you if you're just afraid of traffic. But you should learn the looking over the shoulder technique.
All right. Thank you very much for the call from all the way over in Sterling. And now let's go to line one. You're on the air with Dave. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm calling from Champaign, and I had a question and a comment. And my question is, what avenues are available to a cyclist who is harassed by an automobile driver? And my comment is that I run a recumbent bicycle club here in town, and I just wanted to point that as an option for people who maybe are having comfort problems that they can't seem to alleviate on a regular bicycle.
What sort of harassment do you encounter?
Well, the type of harassment I usually encounter is in the evenings, late at night, when the bars close, and sometimes I'll have things thrown at me, or, you know, I've had people try to actually hit me with their car.
Well, you have a couple options, and in my book, Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips, I talk about your range of options from the passive to the more assertive. If you have a continuing problem in a particular area, which it sounds like you might, I would just avoid that area. I would try to take an alternate route that's parallel. If that's not possible, then you might want to make sure you're going a little more quickly through that area than you normally would. Don't stop at red lights if you ever feel like you're in danger in an area. But if you're going to run red lights, you have to also be very careful about that. Secondly, if you continue to find that particular places cause you trouble, then you might want to get legal with it. In other words, you want to take down as much information, record as much information about the offender, and then not at that moment, but separately, so you don't aggravate or escalate the situation, go to the police and press charges. Because people who do that to you, whether you're a pedestrian, a motorist, or a bicyclist, they should be punished for that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was my understanding that you don't have a lot of clout unless you have a witness.
Well, you know, if you cause someone to be called by the police or visited by the police, often that will calm them down and make them think twice about doing it. You may not be able to actually prosecute them, but sometimes that's often enough. And my book has some other options that you might want to take a look at as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And, David, it's about time to wrap things up here. The hour's gone by pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Always wear a helmet. Do you always wear a helmet?
I always do. About 1,000 people a year in the United States get killed on bicycle crashes, and about three-quarters of those are from head injuries. So if you wear a helmet, you can prevent that.
Yeah, and I'm afraid a lot of people probably don't because maybe the inconvenience or maybe the way they look or the way their hair looks, but that has to be about one of the most important things you can do to help, protect yourself.
And my book tells you how to avoid helmet head as well.
Great. The book is called Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips, Low-Tech and No-Tech Ways to Find, Ride, and Keep a Bicycle. It's published by World Space Press of Chicago. And Dave Gloetz has been our guest, the author of the book, and some other pamphlets on bicycling. Thank you very much, Dave.
It's been a pleasure, Jay.
It's been good talking to you. Thank you again. And if you'd like to call and find the book, if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area, 1-800-888-4741 by mail. You can find it, of course, at Pages for All Ages bookstores in Champaign-Urbana as well.